We're going to end this hour with a little Beck. He's got a new album out, but let's start with some early Beck back in the 90s when he came out with what must be the ultimate slacker tune.
In the time of chimpanzees, I was a monkey. Butane in my veins and a mouth to cut the chuggy with the plastic eyeballs. Spray paint the vegetables, dog food skulls with the beefcake pantyhose.
Beck Hansen was more awkward, skinny white kid than rock star. And his quirky classic Loser introduced listeners to his most endearing quality, humor. Much of his early work is infused with a sharp comic tone. Think songs with titles like Sissy Neck and Satan Gave Me a Taco. In the last few years, Beck's records have become more serious. His latest, Modern Guilt, may be his darkest yet. When Beck sat down with us to talk about his work, he said it's not that he sees things differently. It's just that when he was starting out, his first instinct was always to go for a laugh.
I came out of playing in coffee houses and bars. So really, just as a performer, that was kind of a survival mechanism. Usually I was the first band or playing in between the bands that people actually came to see. So the humor was something that just sort of helped me get people's attention, I guess.
How you like me now?
Pretty good.
Going on, feeling strong. I quit my job blowing leaves. Telephone bills up my sleeves.
A lot of the songs were written about people that I knew, usually neighbors that I had. I had some pretty eccentric neighbors, and a lot of what I encountered in life at the time went right into the songs.
And they were thinking like this. Why don't go in prison, got the song?
Your new CD suggests you're in something of a different place from certainly your earlier work, but even your last couple of projects. Let's play one song, Volcano.
Okay, yeah.
Which
this
is indicative.
This one's pretty serious, yeah.
I don't know what I've seen. Was it all an illusion, a mirage gone bad? Many of these songs, in fact, most of the lyrics have some are depressed. Some seem as if the narrator is anxious.
Yeah.
The title track, Modern Guilt, it really exemplifies that.
I feel uptight when I walk in the city. I feel so cold when I'm at home. Feels like everything's starting to hurt me. I lost my bearing 10 minutes ago.
So you can tap along with it,
but
a kind of a complicated mixed message as a piece.
Yeah, the way a lot of my songs are written, I write the music first and I record it, and then with a song like Modern Guild, I just get on the microphone and I write something really quick, sort of off the top of my head, so I can remember the melody. And what happens a lot of times is that what I initially sing on there ends up being on the record. A lot of these things, I don't really get to spend too much time figuring out what it is.
Mother gives all in our hands. Mother guilt won't get me to bed.
Sometimes when you record something and write something off the cuff like that, you'll say things that are a bit more simple or more direct, and simpler lyrics work better, I think, melodically. Unless you're doing a talking blues or rap, which I think is one of the things that first attracted me to. I mean, I wouldn't claim that it's rap. It's spoken, you know, whatever, a song like Where It's At. Or
and why wouldn't you claim it's
'cause
rap?
Because, you know, it doesn't come from hip-hop. You know, I used to hang out with a lot of poets and people who did spoken word, you know. So I think I thought my rap, quote, rap songs were coming from that.
There's a destination a little up the road from the habitations of the towns we know.
a place we saw the lights turn low, the jigsaw jazz in the get fresh flow.
And my grandfather was an artist, and he came up in New York in the 40s and 50s, and he spoke in that kind of zoot suit hipster lingo of that time, you know, the beats, and
let's
I think I had a lot of influence from him.
Let's talk about him for a moment. His name is Al Hanton, and
yeah,
by the 60s, he was an artist who was leading a school of art. People would know Yoko Ono. Of all those probably artists, she's obviously the most famous.
Yeah, that's the Fluxus movement. He passed away when I was in my early 20s, so I never really got to sit down and ask him about all these things. But I definitely remember the way he talked.
How did he talk?
He had a lot of made-up words, or what seemed to be made-up words. He was just riffing all the time. You know, it was a broken-down traffic miasma. We boogied uptown over here and whatnot and this and that, and it was just all rolling off of his tongue.
Pick yourself up off the side of the road with the elevator bones and your whiplash tones. Members only, hypnotizers move through the room like ambulance drivers.
Well, one thing those artists did, they made collages and assemblages. It did occur to me that it's something like what you've done in music.
Well, yeah, he liked to say that he was an alchemist. But really it was that he was broke. He couldn't afford art materials, so I think he decided early on, I'm going to make art out of what I have around. So it was candy wrappers and cigarette butts. And when I was a child, he used to send us to the garbage can. When we were at a restaurant, we'd go to all the ashtrays that were left. We used to collect all the cigarette butts for him, for his artwork.
Have you ever written a song with your grandfather in mind? He sounds like such a character.
I don't think I have, no. I mean, he's in there somewhere. I think I have an assignment now.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Yeah, no, it was a pleasure.
And you can hear full songs from Beck's new album Modern Guilt at NPR Music on npr.org. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montaigne.
And I'm Steve Inskeep.
And now it's time to hear from you. Last week, you were asked to tell us about a song that changed your life. Thanks to everyone who replied, here are two of your stories.
My name is Maureen Cavanaugh, and I'm from Brooklyn, New York. There's this man on the F train line at 14th Street, and he plays only Neil Young songs, and he plays them very passionately.
I've been first and last. Look at how the time goes past, but I'm all alone.
After September 11th, I took the F train, and he was there, and he was playing Old Man, and everyone in the station started to sing along.
Old man, take a look at my life, I'm a lot like you.
It was a really together time where it felt like you were in a community. That's the first experience where I felt like I was kind of in a small town. My name is Melissa Turney, and I'm from Las Vegas, Nevada. The song that truly influenced my life is Moving On by Rascal Flatts.
I'm moving on.
I was in the car with my mom driving up to Idaho to go to college. My mom, who was beside me, was going to be leaving me there, and I wasn't going to have her comfort with me anymore. And then the song came on, and both of us just knew that it was meant to be. It was very emotional and very profound.
There comes a time.
I didn't know at that point how much life there was and how much I would experience.
To all those who are moving on to college this weekend, we wish you the best of luck.
I have made up my mind that those days are gone.
Andrew Jackson was a patriot and a traitor. He was the greatest of generals and wholly ignorant of the art of war. He was the most candid of men and capable of the profoundest dissimulation. He was a democratic autocrat. an urbane savage, an atrocious saint.
That was the description of Andrew Jackson by his first biographer, James Parton, in 1859. In his time, the seventh president of the United States and the father of the Democratic Party inspired hatred, pride, and reluctant admiration from his countrymen. It's a story that also inspired composer Christopher Hedge to write the music for a public television documentary about Jackson's life. The music is now available on CD. It's called Andrew Jackson, the Atrocious Saint. Christopher Hedge is in the studios of KQED in San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Leanne.
It's interesting to hear the very first cut, because the very first words that you write in the liner notes, and you use Andrew Jackson's description of himself, "I was born for the storm." I mean, is that first cut, you're setting us up to discover this man?
Yeah, very much. I think that there's a sense of his military foundation, that was his original claim to fame. And then I think it begins to contrast sort of the panorama of characters that this guy represents and metaphors that he represents to me.
Hmm. Can you explain why Andrew Jackson was such a divisive figure in American history?
This is not a time where America was sure that it was going to survive. And I think that the elite in Washington were especially afraid of a charismatic military leader forming a populist leadership.
And meaning Andrew Jackson was not an elitist.
That's correct. He was of the people.
A populist, though, at the time, you know, you hear about what happened with the slaves and what happened with the Native Americans, and those don't sound like populist ideals to me.
I know. The quote from his first biographer, I think, and the reason that I titled the record The Atrocious Saint, is because of the contrasts and the real contradictions in Jackson and in his character. And I think those are contradictions that we have ourselves. We have an ideal of what we believe that we are as a country, and then you have the reality of what we actually do as people. And that's, I think, represented by Jackson.
There are no lyrics on the CD, but there are many voices here because you're telling the story of Andrew Jackson, not just his story, but the story of the lives he affected. The music of American Indians, R. Carlos Nakai, is the Native American flutist on a few tracks. Now, just a bit of background. Andrew Jackson served in the Army during the First Seminole War. Then as president, he oversaw the westward expansion and the Indian Removal Act. How are his policies toward Native Americans reflected in your music? You do have a tune called Trail of Tears.
Jackson, I think, believed that he was saving the Cherokee, but they did it in such a rushed way and such an unprepared way that it was a tremendous tragedy and thousands died. When R. Carlos is playing, it's his ancestry that is playing through the flute. He, I think, is the most appropriate person to be able to translate for the rest of us how that feels.
R. Carlos Nakai is teamed with Tito Sampa, the percussionist.
Yes.
He's from the Congo. Now, why pair these two?
The idea in this case was that the Indians were being removed and the slaves were being forced in. And there is, to this day, a huge tension between these two cultures. And to me, it seemed a worthwhile idea to put these two in the room together, and it was, I think, wonderful. ¶¶
you concentrate on the voices of slaves in work song. Andrew Jackson kept slaves himself. Slave labor was important to his westward expansion. What are we hearing in this song?
Titos is struggling through this piece, and you can hear his sort of pain as he contemplates the endless labor that people were subjected to with absolutely no potential for ever rising out of it. Hey. Oh.
Did Titos have a difficult time performing the song?
I think so. This is a source of great sadness to Titos. He tells a story of Louis Armstrong coming to the Congo. He came to Titos' town when Titos was just a boy. And as soon as Louis Armstrong looked over the crowd and recognized the curvature of the face and realized that this was his ancestral, this is his people, people looked like him, he said that he broke down in tears. And the whole crowd was so affected that they put him on a what they call a king carrier. They lifted him up and carried him across the river into Zaire. And that shows you how deep the root between those that were removed and those that are still there. And so Titos carries a lot of that with him.
You worked on this project for a long time, did a lot of research. Did you get any new understanding of that time?
I got a new understanding of our time. I found my way backwards through that time, and I was completely surprised and fascinated by how little I knew about it. That taught me a lot about how we are now, and I see this very narrow focus on the image of what an American is. A person looking at history has to look at all of the histories, and there are so many more than the narrow focus that we normally have. And that's why you have the music from the Irish and Scottish and Native American and slave and parlor music and classical. These are all the things that form this great collection of soul that we are.
Christopher Hedge is a composer based in San Francisco. His new CD is called Andrew Jackson, the Atrocious Saint. He joined us from member station KQED in San Francisco. Thank you.
Thank you, Leanne.